Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Black Friday shopping was mid, meh, and just a bit down this year, but we did get to talk tech to the elders over the holiday. Buying real estate together in groups with friends, family, and even a few strangers may have gotten just a bit easier. The NNPA and Digital Mindstate team up to bring Tech This Out News to a network of over 230 Black-owned newspapers that engage an audience of 43 million people per week. And is the payday for Black creators finally here? We discuss all this and more in episode 12 of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And coming out of Philly, it's your girl, Tech Like Steph.
And yo, out of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. Congested, because I'm just now coming over a cold. So if I sound all goofy, chalk it up to the coming over a cold, my 11-year-old brought home something and then gave it to my son, my youngest son, and I thought I escaped, but he gave it to me. So I've been on the couch all weekend long in between eating turkey, coughing and hacking and snotting.
So that's one thing that I love about my children being older. Like my youngest is about to graduate high school. So if they sick or if my wife or I get sick, they just completely ghost you. You don't see them. And it reminds me, a really, really close friend of mine. In fact, we don't even call each other friends. He's like a brother to me. He actually caught COVID. And fortunately, he's okay. He was vaccinated, but he got it. And there were times when it's like, is our son in the house? Because he like just ghosted his parents. It's like the only time you would hear his son is like when he was literally hitting their second floor and then exiting. It like my I know how my nephew is. He probably was holding his breath with a can of Lysol in front of him as he walked from, you know, where he was in the house, you know, to get out. So, so yes, yeah, so when they get older, it's a little easier to not catch whatever it is they have. But hey,
when they're young, you're going to catch it. Yeah. That's all there is to it. Cause you know, they want to give you hugs and high fives and got to make sure you wash their hands and you got to go in there with them to wash their hands and you make their food.
Yeah.
And it's just contagious.
So speaking of food, we just had a little holiday over here. We just had a holiday. Nice. How was y'all's Thanksgiving? We'll get to tech eventually, but we got to ask how the holiday was.
Well, you know how mine was.
Yeah. Thanksgiving was good. It's funny. It's just me and my mom here, in Philly. She lives with me and we're being a little, I won't call it lazy, but just a little self-care, a little me time. Didn't nobody want to do a whole bunch of cooking on Thursday. So we got this Thanksgiving dinner to go from this restaurant that just was not great. I mean, it was but it was just, it wasn't the same. But we actually cooked today. This was our day to make our food. Mm-hmm. And I actually ate right before we started recording this, podcast. I was like, let me eat before, because usually on Mondays when we report on Mondays, I usually wait to eat dinner after we finish up. But I was like, you know what? I'm a little hungry right now. I don't want my stomach grumbling on the mic as we're doing things. So I was like, I'm eating real. And it was just like, your own food. There's nothing like in the world,
especially around now. It's, you know, any other time, you know, 4th of July, you know, New Year's, things like that. You may Memorial Day, you may, you know, eat out or whatever the case may be with Thanksgiving. Yeah. And it ain't the same.
And I will say, I tried a new mac and cheese recipe that was actually bomb AF. Like, just it cut out a lot of the other steps that I used to do, and just really made it real simple, but it was so good and creamy and flavor. Shout out to TikTok. I found it on this brother's TikTok. I can't even remember his name right now, but I saved it specifically because I was like, I'm gonna make this. And it was actually really, really good. So,
I got
the mac and cheese at the next cookout.
Oh, yeah. I am a connoisseur of mac and cheese. I love that stuff. It's delicious. But this is a tech story related to Thanksgiving. Terrence, you've probably heard or read part of this, but I want to ask the question or just tell a little story. So one of my aunties, who is fairly computer savvy. I mean, she knows how to get on, log on, get to the sites that she wants to get to, purchase online, do all that kind of stuff. But she decided that what would be really, really cool for the family, because, you know, they like, you know, my family, like, they like getting around and looking at photo albums and all that kind of stuff and just going back and looking at all the stuff that they have Polaroids for. So she decided that, you know what we're going to do, you know, what would be good stocking stuffers is that we're going to burn CDs and DVDs of all the pictures that you could find. So, of course, when I am around any of my family, number one, I'm the oldest cousin of the group. Number two, I'm the guy who went into tech. So I'm always going to be the tech guy, no matter what, you know, what it is. So I am now the one who has to explain to my auntie why burning DVDs with pictures on them is no longer a thing that we do. And, you know, we just had to show us, like, you know, well, it's rare to find a computer with a CD or DVD player in anymore. It's like they really don't put them in there like that anymore. Yeah. So that's problem number one. Then it's two, it's so easy to do stuff with, you know, just do it in the cloud, whether you, you know, I am a huge fan of Google Photos. I have, you know, I have been touting, you know, Google Photos just to make things easier for this. I know that there are other reasons why maybe you shouldn't use it. But when it just comes to the ease of use and anyone who has access to, you know, some type of internet connectivity can use it. You know, so we had to get her up on that. And, what was great about the conversation, it didn't take that long. It was maybe a half hour because, like I said, she is someone who she uses a computer. And, so she's like, oh, okay. That actually makes sense. And it's easier and it's cheaper. But, you know, if I juxtapose her with other family members, then you would have to explain that, well, if you take the picture on your phone, you can still look at it on your computer. It was not one of those kind of conversations because I've had that before to where it doesn't matter if you take it on your phone, you can still look at the pictures on the computer, or if the pictures are on the computer, you can still look at them on your phone. So,
well, surprisingly, yeah. Most people, flip through their photos on their phone. You may share photo mm-hmm. albums. You may upload them. Like we use, I use Apple Photos, right? Mm-hmm. And then I just have I call it family in them. Shared photo album to where I share that to my brother, my sister, my mother, my father, my aunts, my uncles, anybody that's has an iPhone or has an iPad, you know, I share the link out to them and then they can view them. But it really isn't the same, which is probably where your aunt was trying to get mm-hmm. with yeah. the stocking stuffers. She was yeah. trying to hand them something versus saying, oh, check out this link. And right. then you kind of, you may look at it.
Merry
and you may
Christmas.
Not.
Here's
right.
the link.
You're right, right, right. Phone. It's not the same, right? So there are some apps and there's some services out there that'll let you upload photos. I know Apple Photos does it natively. You can actually create a photo album and upload your pictures. You can arrange them in the book. You can get a book cover. You can put, you know, little messages in the book. But I'm pretty sure there are apps and services out there that will enable you to upload photos, print out a little photo album, maybe about it, you know, not oh, even yeah. big as a book. Mm-hmm. And you use that as a stocking stuffer.
Definitely. I think that would be, yeah, just to right. give people a physical thing. I think, mm-hmm. right. I'm not sure if Snapfish is still in business, but they were really good at that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a ton of those kind of things.
Yeah. Like I didn't, like I said, Google Photos is the one that I went with. It does have that, but it's just interesting, you know, to have conversations with folks who are, you know, in their 70s or older. Mm-hmm. And they're getting mm-hmm. down with technology. Like I said, this was a conversation where it could have went south real fast. It did not. It's like, yeah, she's like, nephew, that actually makes a lot of sense. That's, it's like, because, you know, like I use my iPad more than I use a computer. How am I going to put a CD or DVD in there? So she got why that wasn't the, you know, the greatest thing. And Terrence, you know, to your point, that actually might be, you know, I might have to holler at them at Christmas to say, hey, you know, use this service. I'll research it. We'll come up with one. Or if any listeners.
Photo album. You can't go bad with a good photo album.
Right. Right. So with it being Thanksgiving, let's continue on that track. Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Y'all get any good stuff?
It was kind of, as the kids would say nowadays, Black Friday was kind of mid. Ain't that how they use it?
Met.
Are you using it? Met. No, I've heard it say mid. I've heard M-I-D. I meant to look at mid as in high, high, mid, low.
Like, right,
yeah,
like average.
Yeah, okay. Especially
that's
especially
what the kids are saying.
Yeah, that's what the young folks are saying. It was mid this year. especially with Apple, they some busters when it comes to Black Friday deals.
Yeah, they don't.
They offer a deal, but it's like you buy something, get a gift card that you can use toward the purchase of something else.
Wow.
Well, I'm buying the thing that I want the deal on.
Right.
I don't want to buy the thing just to try to get a deal on something else, you know. So Apple's kind of a letdown when it comes to Black Friday. You know, one of the popular, not the popular things, probably what is becoming even more mainstream now is buy black on Black Friday. So bought a couple hoodies, bought a couple t-shirts, bought some, my wife's birthday is coming up next week. So I got her some items, crossed some items off her list, make sure they was buy black. So I did some of that. And then bought a treadmill for Black Friday. So me and my wife researched it. So we're going to amp up these New Year's resolutions.
Now all you got to do is use it.
Which is, that ain't even paying, you know, upwards of $1,000+ for a treadmill. Ain't the hard part. The hard part is using that joint.
Getting on that joint. Not letting it become that valet.
Towel rack.
The very expensive towel and dirty clothes
right.
hanger in your room.
Yeah,
I didn't buy much of anything. I'm not a big Black Friday shopper. I was never that person that was going to be somewhere at 3 a.m. and, you know, trying to get the deal, the doorbuster deal or whatever. I did actually patronize a couple small Black-owned businesses. I wasn't even thinking that, you know, oh, it's Black Friday. Let me buy, you know, black or whatever. They just, that's when I wanted to buy some stuff. So I just kind of bought it. But yeah, I didn't do a whole lot. It was funny though that, you know, we talked about, or we're going to talk about, how online spending decreased because there were 2 million more people shopping this season than last season. So the idea that we spent less money is really interesting.
Yeah, you know, good segue to that, because I think it wasn't much less. In the grand scheme of things. But yeah, we actually spent less, and this is the first time in history that a Black Friday, we actually spent less as Americans than we did the previous, you know, Black Friday. So that was, you know, of note. And I'm wondering why. And, you know,
I think people, they really pushed that supply chain panic on people. And granted, there is a supply chain issue. Don't get me wrong. But the idea that you better get it early was pushed very, and still is being pushed, but, you know, was pushed to the point where even back in, you know, August, September timeframe, they were like, if you see something, you better get it now. You better get it now. So I think a lot of people probably were a lot more proactive this year just because they didn't think they would be able to get something by this time.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure Black Friday sales actually started around Thanksgiving, but around Easter earlier this year. I mean, because it's I can't remember not seeing stuff for sale for Christmas, going back to when I was still wearing shorts and, you know, and t-shirts outside. And, you know, that, not that that was that long ago, but it just seems like we've been in this cycle forever. The other thing, and I haven't read news on this, this is just what a Rob thinks, but I think stimulus works. We had a lot of folks that got a lot of stimulus payments, you know, last year. The reason that those were put out is because ultimately the government wanted people to use that money, to buy things to continue, their normal habits.
Which is a crazy concept. Yeah. I don't mean to cut you off. Yeah. We need to stimulate the economy. So instead of stop letting the billionaires with these tax loopholes.
Right.
So right. you can get more money to stimulate the economy. Here you go, passing out chump change to the small folks, the middle, lower income, you know, general population, you know, and expect them, hey, we need y'all to stimulate the economy. But then these millionaires and billionaires over here, it's like, hey, you know, we'll do what we can to let y'all, you know, trickle down.
All
y'all
have to do is pay everybody $15 an hour and the economy be stimulated as a mom. Like, just pay people. That's all.
That's a conversation for another day. Right. So, but I digress.
That being said, I think that it worked. And the fact that, you know, that was year one of the pandemic when nobody was going to the stores. I mean, everybody was sitting at the crib. So when they got the opportunity to see all of the online sales and stuff, because that's, you know, that is basically the way we did stuff last year, was everything was purchased online. I think that that was maybe we did a little better than we probably normally would have done just because there was so much online purchasing. And I think that now we're back into a mode of people are actually going into the stores, but still not to the level that they used to. So folks aren't necessarily going overboard on buying because they've been able to buy stuff, been able to go into stores all year. But they're still saying, you know, it's kind of nice buying stuff online. And I think one of the things you miss out on when you do, like if you're like me, I don't plan on stepping in any store that the primary purpose of that store is like hardware or food, until probably February. I don't like being in stores like that. I don't like being in crowds like that. So everything I'm doing is online. But what I notice is that when I would go to the store, they always catch you with that, you know, you get this thing, but this is stemming from what my mother used to do. I see something that I know somebody wants. Hey, you want me to pick this up? That doesn't really happen too much online. You just go and get what you get. So I wonder if there's any, you know, correlation. Once again, like I said, I'm not looking at any numbers or anything to say, and this is just what Rob thinks. I just think that so many people are buying online those extraneous things that you get. Would you like fries with that? Isn't necessarily happening. I know that we try to do that.
On the internet.
I've built Shopify stores that you actually try to upsell. I just don't think that it works quite as well online as it does when you're in the store and you got a human right there talking with you. So, like I said, numbers didn't, you know, weren't missed significantly. I think we were only $100 million off where we were, last year. But that is an interesting trend, just because, it is the biggest shopping day of the year. A lot of businesses, you know, this is where they make their money. 20% of their money comes from literally, the week around Thanksgiving.
Well, we'll just say everybody should do their best to support a small business in their area.
So I'm not even sure who put this in, who put this story in about the fractional startup that raised $500 million?
Oh, I put that in there.
Okay. Let's talk about this. I'll let you go ahead and tell, what the story is.
When we linked up in Atlanta, we kind of had a dinner. We kind of talked about real estate investing. So I know most of us here are into real estate investing. I personally am in a real estate investing group to where we have all ponied up money in order to buy multifamily properties. But it's real, not archaic is not the right word. But, you know, it's really, there's no tech to it, you know, outside of opening a bank account, you know, it's traditional old real estate. You know, we've all signed an agreement to say, hey, we're going to invest this much. And these are the type of properties we're looking for, you know, and then it's up to everybody kind of go out and kind of find these properties. Right. Well, the reason why this piqued my interest, because it actually may possibly serve my specific use case, is because Fractional is a startup company. They've raised a bunch of money to the tune of
$500 million is a type.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. $5.5 million to let friends and strangers invest in real estate together. So a pair of people who work for a firm, which is the buy now, pay later, to where you can go online, you can buy something, go to their site and you can pay for it later. They have decided to break away from a firm, start this startup called Fractional. And basically what you do is it makes it technical, you know, it adds tech flavor to going in with somebody to actually buy property. So if you got five on it, you and your homies, you can pony up, go to fractional.com. And it takes all of the the legwork out of, you know, getting together to start real estate, making taxes easier, making finding property easier, creating all the operating agreements, you know, that you would think of when you're going in up with a partner to invest in property. So, you know, I just wanted to put that out there and then get your takes on, you know, with something like this work, you know, or are people still kind of used to doing it or more accustomed to doing something on this scale, the old school way, by making sure, you know, you can, you know, sign papers and fax papers and email papers, or would something like this actually be a use case for everybody that's seemingly now getting into real estate?
I looked at this and I had some thoughts. I wrote some notes down. Right. Because they talk about the three-step process that they facilitate for people in interested in investing in real estate. The first part was to matching the groups together to start the underwriting process. And, you know, for anybody that doesn't know, the underwriting process is the process that the mortgage company uses to determine your credit worthiness. Like, how likely are you to be able to get a mortgage? So, you know, they're bringing these groups together based on that. And I could see that maybe working out a little bit easier when it's a group that is already a group of friends, you know, people, known people. But when you're talking about a group of strangers, how does that get facilitated? And now, are we in a position now where we all got to give our social security numbers because we all need our credit scores and we all need bank statements? And that's a lot of information, I feel like, to give over to a company like this to execute that process. The second thing they do is facilitate the purchase, obviously. So, you know, is that something where they're presenting you with properties that you can either say yes or no to, or are they actually going out and finding the properties and you kind of have to take it or leave it and say, we like this one, we'll invest. We don't like this one, we won't invest. Are we trusting them to know neighborhoods and regions and demographics and all of the information around what a property in your area that you would be interested in investing in would look like, based on the fact that they're out in California. And then the third part is that they partner with property managers to, you know, help run the property once you have it. So this is all basically assuming you want to be somebody's landlord and want to be a part of that process, you know, forever, you know, getting that passive income from being a landlord. And I don't know that that's everybody's bag necessarily. So there were a couple different things there that I was kind of like, is that sustainable and scalable? I'm not sure. What if somebody in your group didn't qualify in the underwriting process? Do they get dropped and not get to take advantage of the opportunity? Like, how's that going to work? And again, the amount of data they would need to handle all of that on your behalf.
Right.
I don't know that I would be willing to give that up.
Right. And the amount of things that they're doing. They're helping you find properties.
Right.
They're linking people together. They give you property management. They give you real estate suggestions. It's like, that's
all kind of stuff.
Right.
And
I'm
doing two different things around real estate. I have invested in a group. It's a local group here in Philadelphia, a young woman, actually a young sister, that has a construction company as well as a real estate company. And they go out and they buy the land. They get the land zoned for commercial use or mixed use or whatever use. They do all of the stuff you have to do down at City Hall, you know, with the permits and all that stuff. Uh-huh. And then you can either stay on, you know, because they end up, they either flip the land. So once they've zoned it and graded it and got the engineer's report on the soil and all that other stuff, they either sell the land to a bigger developer and flip the land, and then you can cash out your investment at that point. Or if they're keeping the land, you can stay invested while they develop, like I said, a mixed use property, like stores on the bottom and apartments up top or something like that, and then still be a partner in that process and either cash out after that or continue to get passive income from that. So I like that because all I had to do was cut a check. You know what I mean? I don't have to think about anything else. Like, I'll cut a check, and then in a couple years, you know, your money will mature to where you're getting two or three times your investment, and you just get that back and you do whatever. And the other thing I do is invest in REITs, which are real estate investment trusts. So REIT, and they are basically just mechanisms where, like, hotels per se. Like hotels rent. Like hotels don't own the land that they sit on. They rent. So somebody might have a real estate investment trust of all hotels that you now invest in, but then you get that dividend from when they pay that rent. And, you know, the more you invest, obviously, the more dividend you can get, which can also become a passive stream of income if you got enough money in there. So those are like, when it comes to real estate, I prefer to be as hands-off as possible, right. Even though I am a landlord. I actually am a landlord, but it's just to one person who lives underneath me right now. And, you know, I don't have to do a ton because the building's in good shape, so I don't do a ton of repairs. But the idea that I would want to get into, like I said, that type of situation, you know, with a bunch of other people. Am I doing it? I'm just like, I don't know if I'm doing all that.
Right. So when I looked at this, I initially thought a couple of things. Number one, I thought, is this kind of like a REIT? I mean, it kind of seems like that a little bit.
Until they put the property management piece in there.
Exactly. That part made me think, it's like, okay, is this like a high tech new way to do like mortgage brokering or something like that, to where you basically, you found a property that somebody wants to just get rid of. You also have someone or a group who wants to buy, potentially develop and do stuff. Is this a service that's going to hook those groups up together, with software? So I don't want to initially say that, oh, I'm not interested in this. I am interested in it. Not necessarily ready to invest yet, but I'd like to see how this works, because I'm like you, Stephanie, from a, you know, I don't want to do the property management. I want, here's a check. Give me checks, you know, every month. And that's all that I want to, you know, really have to worry about. And I wonder if this helps you get towards that. Now, the downsides that I can see, and they actually pointed this out in an article as well, is that, you know, what happens when, you know, you've bought this property, let's say you do it with four or five family members, and now one family member life changes, I now want to get out. Or you know, I don't want to put a new furnace system in. I'm not necessarily wanting to do that. How do those things get expressed? You know, how are they addressed? Right. You know, what does the language look like? Because there's got to be some type of contract, you know, in place. If you're going to be renting stuff out to people, you have to make sure that you're maintaining, you know, those properties. So is all of that going to come out of the profit margin? I mean, I'm assuming that it would, but how does that actually look?
So the way I would use this is I would just use this for the sole purpose of organizing everything. Not necessarily using not using a property management services, probably not using it to actually find property or anything like that. Just use to say, all right, us three, we've decided to buy a property. We've already found the property. We've already made the agreement as to what shares that we're going to invest and what percentages we're going to get back. We've already identified a property manager. We just need an official technological way to organize this process. I can see us using, to get it done to where we all know where the documentation is. You know, we all know how everything is laid out. And then if we have any questions, we can use this and immediately refer to this to get any questions answered, but still rely on us as far as the back end for property management, for finding the property, you know, and deciding.
And see, now you're cutting into their profit that way.
Right.
I'm sure their agreement that they have with these other entities is how they're going to make their money.
Possibly.
You know, plus the percentage of our processing, you know, some processing fee for our stuff. But, you know, they're going to have an agreement with a mortgage company, with an underwriter, with a property manager, with a real estate company in every area. So, you know, I could see that being maybe the 2.0 version where you get to sort of pick and choose the services you want them to facilitate for you. But right now I see it as all or nothing, honestly.
Right.
I can't
see
putting up all those little pieces for people right now.
Right.
Because it just wouldn't make sense, because there's probably, you know, entities that already do that kind of thing individually. I think the fact that they're aggregating all of these things together is probably their hook. Right now. So like, you know, like I said, 2.0, you can just do this piece or just do that piece. But I have a feeling right now they would want you to kind of go all through all three of those steps with them in order to make it make sense. I was also looking at their valuation, and it seemed a bit high.
Based
on the fact that it's still in beta, and you only got like, you got 400 waitlisted people who ain't even using it for real yet. You know, I'm like, that sounds like the valley.
it definitely sounds like that. But
I was just like, okay, bet.
It is interesting. Nice. It is absolutely an interesting idea.
A seven-figure valuation at all?
We got a crowdfund and use all these other crowdfunding stuff.
No,
you know,
kind of valuations, but they getting 30 out the gate.
You know how it is. Okay, but you know how it is.
I know how it is because I saw how it was with Clubhouse, but we ain't gonna talk about that.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. So I got a question for y'all. Do you think you could use this service to buy virtual real estate?
No, but
I saw that and I was like, what?
But you know what, people, and not to cut you off, but people have realized, okay, I need to be on the ground floor of the next thing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just looking at history.
Yep.
I miss Google. I missed Apple. I missed Netflix. You know, I may have missed Coinbase and crypto. Next thing, what's the metaverse?
Metaverse.
Whatever it is,
that's it.
I'm in it. I'm diving in. I'm in.
And this company, there is a company in Canada. It's called tokens.com. They are a Canadian investment firm. They paid roughly $2.5
million. Million.
Buy virtual real estate on Decentraland. It's a blockchain-based metaverse, so it's its own metaverse. They bought a 116 parcel piece of real estate, which roughly translates to 6,090 square feet of land, and they're going to use it it was on Decentraland's fashion street or something. So they're going to use it for digital fashion shows and e-commerce for brands and stuff like that. But this is, yeah, like you said, this is the ground floor of what this whole metaverse thing is going to be. And you know, they bought it for 2.5. They probably going to sell it for 10, you know, yeah. Once this whole metaverse thing really gets ramped up. And now I think with this purchase, we can see why Facebook and other companies are trying so hard to be the metaverse for their particular area, because now, you know, they're going to be selling land, digital land. They're going to be renting out digital real estate space. If you want to be a part of a particular metaverse, you're going to have to pay to play. So the opportunities are really endless and limitless. I'm mad that it already cost $2.5 million to get in the game.
For 6,000 square feet. Is that what you're saying?
So, yeah, 6,090 square feet. That's how much it translates to in like real, you know, real estate or whatever. But it's like, you know, it has begun. The metaverse has begun. And you know, I guess we all better just get on board.
So, you know, my questions for Decentraland, because they've been around for a while. This is not like a new, you know, a new place. You've been able to go and do these type of things. This is just the biggest purchase of a virtual real estate to date that we, you know, that we're aware of. But, you know, so what is their plan? Are they going to put this on the metaverse? You know, are they going to compete against the metaverse? You know, how is all this going to work? Because 2.5 million. But if Facebook just, they just got the, you know, the Facebook thing is just perfect and everybody goes there and you're not there. how quickly does the $2.5 million that you put there just dissipate and go to nothing because no one is on your platform? They're now in this other platform.
That's going to be the thing, because I think Facebook is going to kill the game, you know, unless Apple gets really, you know, and I read something recently about Apple and AR, VR, you know, their headset was coming or something like that. But, you know, I think this sort of wild, wild west, you know, gold rush race to be the first metaverse platform or the most popular metaverse platform is real. And these folks out here getting ready.
So
you got that right.
Yeah, I know someone very, very well that they put themselves through grad school by farming. And basically they started a company that farmed. I think the game was called Second Life.
That's old school.
Second Life has been around for forever. It's been around for quite a while. But you know, this person, they were living in Japan and they speak fluent Japanese and fluent English. You know, and because of that, they were able to actually find basically kids who were just living in this game. They could speak, you know, Japanese to them, but then turn around and very easily have conversations with folks in English who, okay, I want to buy a store or I want to buy this farm or I want to do that. And, you know, eventually what they ended up doing is having like a small company of about 6 or 7 folks to where this is what they did. They literally were just farmers inside of this game and they were paying for grad school. And I'm like, that's actually kind of impressive. So, and this is going back probably 10, 11 years ago. So this is not a new thing. So I definitely think that virtual real estate is a thing and it is going to take off. I don't know that I'm ready to get there yet.
And put together a little virtual real estate.
We might.
The three of us. Y'all got 5 on some Meta. Some property in Meta.
It's, you know, I'm just thinking of all the ways. It's like, you know, if this is a thing, if there are people there, and you know what? If people are there, stores are going to want to be where the people are. And if stores are where the people are, then, you know, well, if I'm off in this part of a country that nobody can find me, as compared to being on what sounded like it was, you know, Park Avenue or something like that inside of Decentraland. If you're right there in the middle of thing, people are going to be, oh, wow, there's a sale at this particular store. There's let me go check this out. Let me walk in, see what's going on in there. It's very different than what's happening in the real world, but it's similar.
No different.
It's very similar to what's happening in the real world.
At the end of the day, you just trying to sell somebody something.
Which is kind of my personal knock against virtual reality. When I play games, I go play games to escape the real world. Mm-hmm. So I may play, you know, some military game. I'm big on Call of Duty. I ain't in the military. I ain't in the shape to be in the military. I ain't thought
they
once
ain't
about
to be
going
in nobody's
to
war.
But right, exactly. But, you know, I can see the appeal to wanting to play military, because for me, I get to escape. It's so far removed from my regular life that I use it as an escape. It sounds like the way this is set up, the way this could be going, is like, you know, and then even take the movie Ready Player One is my reference for like the metaverse, right? It's like people go there to actually live, and it's like I live here. Now
in reality.
You're right. I don't get the appeal yet. Now you could change my mind.
Anyway, man.
Right. Like I said, you know, I don't get the appeal yet, but you know, I'm still waiting for that light bulb moment to be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Because again, like I said, I go to escape. I don't want to
why does anybody play Sims? Aren't you just doing regular ass stuff that you would do in real life?
I guess
I've never played because I like to just live my life. But you know, no shade against anybody who wants to play Sims. But like, what is the allure of that when you're literally just doing all the same regular stuff you do in real life?
Get a job and decorate your house. Yeah. And I want to do that.
So no,
I don't want to do that.
I used to work with a guy who was really into the game EverQuest. Once again, this is back in the day. We got to go back to like maybe late 90s, early 2000s. He was really into the game EverQuest right here in Central Ohio. Met his now wife. They've been married for 15, 16 years. who's from, Iceland, playing this game to where they met in the game, formed a relationship to the point to where he decided, I'm going to go take a vacation to Iceland and meet this person. And then she would take vacations to the States. And they did that for a couple of years. And now they're married 15, 16 years, you know, with kids. They actually met in this world. And you know, right. So I don't want to say that they were escaping life, but they built the life based off of what they were doing in there. So
I get it. I get it. I just don't see.
It depends on like what, how quote unquote real this metaverse is supposed to be. Right. You know, is this just a replica of life in a virtual space, or is it an actual getaway and escape? So you can look better, you know, or you can look however you want, and you can, you know, your avatar can do whatever you want, and you can, you know, where you live can look like whatever it wants. But all that stuff is probably going to come with a cost. That's the thing. It's like you're going to be in this metaverse, and to have this fabulous apartment that you don't really have in real life, that's probably going to be a skin that's going to cost some money, you know, and to do all the things you want to do and interact with the people you want to interact with, it's probably going to cost you some money. So it'll be really interesting to see how this all comes together. I'm watching it closely.
Yeah, I'm not sold yet, but this is a thing. Is it going to be a thing? It is a thing. This is not going anywhere. And, you know, the last thing I'll say on this is that I don't even have to look at the metaverse as a place to escape. I'll look at it like it is now my internet browser. Instead of me actually just going and looking at a screen, I'm putting on some goggles and I look left and I look right and I move my mouse forward and I'm physically moving through a world.
Right.
And when I am searching for the new television in 6-7 years on, you know, on Black Friday, I might be doing that inside of metaverse now. And, you know, so if you have a store that is going to catch me, there's like a Best Buy with a big blinking sign saying we have TVs on sale. That might just be the joint that you go to. So I can absolutely see it. Like I said, but am I ready to invest in it quite yet? Not 2.5 mil. I'm in the Midwest. 2.5 mil will get you a nice crib.
I'm saying I might have 100 on it.
Like I said, we got to get a fractional type situation for right. So this next story that we're going to talk about, guys, is one that it actually I had smiles all over myself when I was, you know, looking at this one. The National Newspaper Publishers Association, basically the NNPA, which is one of the biggest, if not the biggest conglomerate of black owned newspapers across the country. They are teaming up with, you know, with Digital Mind State to deliver Tech This Out News. And they're going to be able to deliver this to, 47 million African-Americans. And this is like a right now thing. They're putting this in place just in time for the holidays. So I wanted to get your take on this because, you know, we are the black media. We are definitely tech. You know, what are your thoughts on this?
I'll be curious to see how this plays out because I actually write a monthly tech column for one of the newspapers in this association, the Philadelphia Tribune. And I feel like actually recently I've seen that article propagated across, you know, multiple platforms beyond just the newspaper's website. You know, and I probably need to find out how y'all distributing my content. but it'll be interesting to see, you know, how content can get propagated, you know, with this partnership using these platforms and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, anything that we can do to, you know, buttress our platforms and make them, you know, more self-sustaining and grow them, scale them up, you know, it's never a bad thing. So it's all good.
Yeah. I mean, to this scale, nothing's been done for black tech, you know, as far
and black
as,
media.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Together, as far as journalistic is concerned, you know, nothing to this scale, like I said, so it's a first for everything, you know, definitely, you know, like we mentioned, you know, we'll be paying attention to this to see how it turns out, to see how, you know, like you mentioned, how we can contribute or, you know, benefit as well. So, you know, definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah. Like I said, I saw this and, you know, we were just talking in a previous show last week or week before about how, African Americans, when it comes to podcast listening, in particular, tech is not on the list.
Right.
So, like I said, this made me smile. So, okay, you know, here's another thing that can help that, help get folks to look like us, to talk about stuff that we talk about.
And it's funny, you know, I don't want to dive back into that conversation, but I think, you know, part of that is I don't want people to think that because tech podcasts aren't popping, that Black people aren't into tech. Because, like, Black people are into tech.
You know, absolutely are.
We live it. We breathe it. You know, even beyond just being the content creators that are making up the cool TikTok dances, you know, we are definitely a market piece of this whole, you know, economy. So I think this would do a lot to just bring that to light for everybody, basically, to see that, yes, Black folks do like tech and are into tech, and we do tech. Hopefully this will be a vehicle to really shine that spotlight on that whole idea.
I'm hoping so, because 230 newspapers, 47 million people, that is a heck of a reach. 47 million anything is a whole lot of stuff. So
I'm just
hoping that this works out for them. I'm really interested to see, how this goes. But you actually, I'm gonna use that as a segue into our main story about paydays for Black creators. Are we there yet? So why don't we go ahead and talk about what's happening on platforms like Tidal?
Yeah. So it's funny because, you know, if you look at the DEI space right now, the diversity, equity, and inclusion space right now, like currently, I have a lot of friends in DEI and doing DEI work. And they'll tell you, like, folks was hype last summer, you know, when George Floyd went down and everybody was trying to be, you know, pro-Black and woke and, you know, how can I be an ally and all the rest of that. You know, and it was real, real popping, back when protests were in your face, you know, every other day and things like that. But you ask a DEI professional today, you know, what all those commitments that those companies made, and we stand by our employees and Black lives really do matter and yada, yada, yada. You know, they was all on soapboxes, you know, last summer. But, you know, if you ask a Black DEI professional today, you know, what that landscape looks like, and it's going to be a different story. You know what I mean? I won't say that companies have completely turned their back on that whole idea, but it's going to be a different story. You know what I mean? So, you know, I hope that this is not treated the same way, because right now there is a lot getting done. So Triller, which is like a kind of TikTok-esque app-ish, you know, you do little videos, short videos and stuff like that. Triller is actually offering $2,000 a month plus $2,000 in company equity a month to creators, to Black creators, for, you know, you got to have, there's a whole bunch of content rules. You got to post two things on Triller, and then you have to post some stuff on some other platforms that mention Triller or reference Triller or whatever. So you're basically, you know, this ambassador influencer for Triller, but they're offering $2,000 in cash plus $2,000 in company equity. Facebook has, they started this back in August 2020. So last summer, $25 million Black Creators Program. YouTube has the Black Voices Fund. I think they had about $25 million. TikTok has TikTok for Black Creatives Incubator. They actually gave 10 creators $50,000 each to kind of get their pages popping or whatever. So there are a lot of different companies, social media platforms in particular, that are claiming to, you know, finally realize the importance and the value that Black content brings to their platforms. But again, you know, is this going to be sustainable? Will this last? Because I looked at the Facebook Creators Program and the YouTube Black Voices Fund. They already have closed applications. Like, I don't even know when those applications are going to be open again for people to apply to be in those programs. So, you know, I'm hoping this is not a one and done. The YouTube Black Voices Fund did say that this was going to be a multi-year effort for support of Black creators. And through all these programs, you also get mentorship and, you know, support from the platform and all these other different things. So, you know, they trying, I guess, you know, if they got this much money to give us, how much more are they giving other creators? That's the other question. But, you know, where does this leave us as creators, you know, versus other platforms?
Right. And, you know, you mentioned money, you know, it's not, it's, yeah, you can just say, okay, give us some money or give people money, give out money. Mm-hmm. But, it, you know, just throwing money at a problem is not necessarily the answer, because in this story that you mentioned, one of the creators said specifically they need to do more, or in addition to giving out money, they need to do things like tweak their algorithms, because many believe those algorithms makes their content harder to find, as well as combat unconscious bias. You know, of course, they were speaking out to Facebook, YouTube, mm-hmm. and Twitter, the three that you mentioned, you know, and some of them said, we're working on it. You know, so it's kind of right. like, you know, oh, we're doing this. And then it was like, all right, well, what about this? You know,
right. So. Exactly.
And I think when I introduced this, I said title and I meant Triller. So excuse me for that. Yeah, but you know, Triller, that is the company that actually is doing the verses, right? Isn't that where? I know you can see verses on multiple things, but that's one of the primary platforms for it. So,
well, they bought the rights to verses from Timbaland and so they have the rights to verses, and they do the boxing thing. So you mm-hmm. hear all these with the Paul brothers, Jake Paul and the other Paul, whatever their guys, when they're fighting Logan, these celebrities. Yeah. Logan Paul. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where all those fights happen on Triller. So in addition to doing those, it sounds like they want to beef up their, you know, regular creators, you mm-hmm. know, versus trying to pay all this much for this high end stuff, you know, then maybe come up with some stuff, you know, to support the bottom half.
Right. Yeah. You know, my thought was with this is that, this company isn't doing this. We're just going to help out Black creators. They're right. expecting a return.
It's not altruistic.
There is a return on this investment that mm-hmm. they are, you know, that they are expecting. And maybe they're just forward thinking enough. Like, you know what? This is where the hot stuff is. So let's get it on our platform. Let's get them logged in, and maybe we can all make some money, which I don't have a problem with. But, I just wanted to, you know, kind of make that clear. This is a for-profit company that is, that's you know, right. that is trying to do this. And, I'm not going to get into the comments. I'm not going to get into the tweets about this. You know, this week I did enough of that on our last show.
Why we gotta segregate stuff?
But yeah, I'm going to go ahead and answer some of the questions first.
What you pay white creators? You know what I mean? Then we won't have to segregate nothing.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if? Can you imagine if a company set this up for white folks? Yes. We can't imagine that. Here's the thing: we don't have to. It's already there. It exists. It is a thing. So, this is a company. I fully expect that they have a return on their investment in mind on this, but it's still, you know, we have to make note to what they're doing this, you know. Everybody's not doing this. It's like, you know, we didn't read every single social media platform. We read a couple that are doing these type of things. And once again, it's because they expect that we want to make a return, you know, on our investment. So like I said, I'm looking at this and it's like, it's decent money.
It's something. It's something. I want to make a couple points though. To Terrence's point about the algorithm, I was thinking about that because I looked at, if you're on TikTok at all, @BlackTikTok is the official TikTok account for Black creators on TikTok. So they highlight different Black creators. It's a verified account. That's TikTok's account that they created to highlight Black creators. Mm-hmm. However, that account only has 102,300 followers. Mm-hmm. That's not a lot in the grand scheme of TikTok. You know, mm-hmm. when you got people that literally post sandwiches every day and got, you know, 2.5 million followers. So,
right.
you know, I'm wondering, and I do follow them, by the way. So everybody listening, go follow @BlackTikTok. I'm wondering if that's a function of the algorithm, because TikTok is not showing even their own Black creative content to enough people to mm-hmm. get those numbers up. And, you know, will that be the gotcha that they use to discontinue these programs.
When saying, look at all this, right?
Supported, you know, supported, and we did all this, and we paid all this money, and we gave these creators all this money, and you know, we didn't see any growth in their feeds, and you know, there was no growth on the platform. You know, no one's even following Black TikTok. You know what I mean? So it's just like, is that a function of the algorithm? Is it a function of us not supporting our own? You know, what is it? Probably a little bit of both, maybe, like what's really going on there. But also, like, where does this leave fan base? And that other, what was the name of that platform we talked about last week? Black Page, or that with the brothers, the two African brothers that had that video platform that was like kind of Quibi-esque.
Oh, you're gonna make me go back
what
and
what was
look.
The name of that? Yeah, I can't remember the name of that. But where does this
Black
leave
Tag?
Platforms like
yes.
that? Black Tag,
yes.
yes. Yes, you know, fan base, Black Tag, you know, other platforms like that. Where does that leave them if you now do have, you know, mainstream platforms finally maybe sort of kind of coming around to, you know, understanding the value of Black creators? You know, is anybody ever going to be on fan base now? That's just my question for you guys.
I think that there is always going to be a space for the niche. You know, you can always, it's never a bad thing to niche down, because that's where you may find your audience. And so I think that there's always room for that. But that being said, I want the biggest platforms on the planet to, you know, to show, you know, representation of folks who look like me, not because, well, we're just doing this out of the goodness of their heart. No, they're doing it because it's good business for them. And, you know, these companies need to see that. So I don't want to, like, you know, I don't want the, you know, the Walmart effect of this being in Meta or being on Facebook to happen. I'm not saying that. So I do believe that there is always room for the niche. But no, I want to go eventually to the metaverse and see people who look like me. I want to go, you know, to whatever, you know, Google is doing and hear people who sound like me. You know, those are things that I want of the biggest platforms. And, you know, if they, you know, the things we always hear about, you know, if we ever get it right, we'll eventually get there. Hopefully we will, you know, my children will see that in their lifetime. Like I said, I don't want the big platforms to just completely cannibalize, you know, the smaller ones. But if that were to happen, then they are absolutely doing something right, because right now the way that these platforms operate, it is simply impossible for them to, you know, cannibalize, you know, our type of content. Because if that were the case, we'd be showcased there, and that's not necessarily the case for a lot of these platforms. So, you know, so the companies know we have to fix this, and like I said, this is not just pure altruism. They know that they need to fix this because they know that they're losing users. We talked about that recently. Facebook has less African Americans on it now than they did last year this time. That is a problem for them, that, it may be a blip in the radar today, but if you have a blip today and a blip next month and a blip the month after that, that's a trend and that's a problem, and they need to do whatever they can do to fix that. So I think this is part, you know, of these two companies going, you know, towards making sure that they get bigger and they make more money. It's always about that bottom line.
Yeah.
So folks, we are, as we always do at the end of our show, we want to showcase an African-American in technology. And Stephanie, you're going to talk about Dr. Shirley Jackson in this week's Tech John Spotlight. Why don't you go ahead and take it away?
Yes. And I am, and just as a precursor, forgive me, because I know I'm going to leave out a ton about how amazing this woman is. But I'm going to do my best to kind of just highlight some of her firsts, because she was a first of a lot of stuff. Dr. Shirley Jackson is the first African-American woman to receive a doctorate from MIT in 1973 in any subject. She is one of the first two African-American women to receive a doctorate in physics in the United States. She is the first African-American to become a commissioner of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. She is both the first woman and the first African-American to serve as the chairman of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Okay, I said that twice. In 1995, appointed by then President Bill Clinton. And now she is the first African-American woman to lead a national research university. She is also the first African-American woman elected to the National Academy of Engineering in 2000. 2001. The Honorable Shirley Ann Jackson, PhD, became the 18th president of Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute on July 1st, 1999. Dr. Jackson is a theoretical physicist. Since coming to Rensselaer, Dr. Jackson has led the development of the Rensselaer Plan, has begun implementation of much of the plan while restructuring processes and procedures, and secured a $360 million unrestricted gift commitment to the university. In 2009, she was appointed by President Barack Obama to the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. In 2016, she was awarded the National Medal of Science for work in condensed matter and particle physics, science-rooted public policy achievements, and inspiration to the next generation of STEM professionals. She also worked for Bell Labs back in the day, where she is responsible for a lot of the fiber optic technology that we have now, a lot of the Fios type stuff that we're doing right now. So, I mean, like I said, I am totally leaving out so much about her. Like, I was looking through all of the bios available about her online, and they're all just pages and pages and pages long. This woman is absolutely brilliant, and was at MIT at a time when students would not study with her, you know, did not want to speak to her, did not want to sit next to her in the dining hall, did not want to have anything to do with her, and went in there and crushed it, like Black excellence usually does. So I just felt like, you know, she had to be highlighted in our Tech John spotlight for all of those contributions and the contributions she's still making to the STEM space today. So Dr. Shirley Jackson.
So what you're saying is that in the next dystopian sci-fi flick about the end of the world, she is like on the first bus of people who get saved. Listen, to get put into the arc.
She probably already has created something on her own that can, you know, launch her into her own metaverse.
It sounds like she might have drew that up on a napkin, you know, or something like that.
She's like, let something pop off. I'm out of here. I'm up out of here. I already know the physics of how to get off the planet and all the rest of that. So who knows?
And here's the thing. She received her doctorate in 73. And it seems like that is like a long time ago. But I was around in 73. It's like I was around and walking in 73. So it's not that long ago. That, you know, that, you know, that's 48 years ago that, you know, that she started, you know, down this track. And I'm just like, man, she got more degrees than the thermometer. But she is impressive.
The credits are ridiculous. Like I said, I this is probably not even a quarter of her bio. This is probably like a tenth of her bio. I mean, the stuff that she did while she was at MIT to open the door for students coming behind her, you know, to mentor students, to prepare Black students. I read, there was one part that I read that she created this, she created the first Black student union at MIT. But with that, there was a program, I think it was like the EDGE program, that was designed to recruit Black students. And before this program started, there may have been three or four students that Black students that applied to MIT. After this program started, the very year the program started, there were like 47 students that applied to the school. So, you know, she really just, like I said, kicked in the door, waving the 4-4, the whole thing, and has just been a trailblazer in the STEM space, you know, since the beginning.
Yeah, and today, I don't want to say that it's not a thing. It's a thing for anyone to go to MIT. That's a thing for anyone, white, Black, you know, brown, doesn't matter. That is a thing. But, you know, the work that she's put in makes it a heck of a lot easier for folks who look like us to get there.
Absolutely.
In spite of all the things, you know, all the stuff she had to fight.
She's the president of RPI right now. RPI is a very, very good STEM school as well, on the level of an MIT.
It's like the oldest in the country, isn't it?
Yeah, the idea that she would be the president of that institute at this point. I actually thought about going to MIT and RPI. I don't know if I would have actually gotten in. Because fam, you gave me some money, so I was out. But those were definitely on my short list.
So once again, a great Tech John Spotlight, Dr. Shirley Jackson. Folks, look her up. This is an impressive, impressive, impressive person that she should probably, you know, be highlighted in a movie somewhere or something like that. I mean, she has got a ridiculous, career behind her.
We're waiting for the book.
Right. So, folks, we are at the end of our show. And as we always do, we want to recognize our patrons who I once again forgot to talk about our Patreon at the beginning of the show. So, folks who stayed with us this long, if you're not a patron, you can become one by heading over to patreon.com/thetechjohn. And when you, if you become a patron over there, you'll get some additional benefits. For example, the live stream. This is something that we make available to our patrons who are supporting the show. And we are continuing our streak. This week, we add Rashard Watson, who is a new patron, for us this week. So what up, big homie? This is somebody that I know.
I wonder if he's related to Randy Watson.
I know, right? Watson.
Sexual
and
chocolate.
We got a shout out, Sari, as well. She's been riding with us.
Holding us down.
Oh, Saray's back on?
Saray's back on. So shout out, Saray. I wasn't able to get in the chat today, but just, I saw all your comments and I appreciate them.
Yeah, I should make it a point to go over there and look more often. But like I said, it's butterflies and bumblebees for me. When I see it, I'm like, ooh, look, let me read this. And I'll forget that we're actually doing a live show. But thank you, Saray. We are so honored to have you come and spend time with us as we're recording this little thing called the Tech John. So, Stephanie, why don't you go ahead and kick us off? Tell folks how they can get to you.
You can find me all around the web at Tech Life Steph, or you can check out my website at tilldeathyoutweet.com.
And you can find me on the internet everywhere at Brother Tech. That's BROTHATECH.
And I am at Rob Dunwood on all the things. So you can hit me there. And also we have, there's quite a few folks who are starting to follow The Tech John on Twitter. So you can at The Tech John on Twitter if you want to holler at us or see some of the stuff that we're posting there. We post fairly regularly on Twitter from the official The Tech John or at The Tech John account. So check us out there as well. And that is our show for this week. So until we gather again next week. Peace.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.